I'm Joy Manning, a freelance writer focused on food and health.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about Swedish tofu balls, miso honey glazed salmon, and food routines that bring us joy. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. This isn't a huge shocker, but I had to include it when I saw the headline, This One Eating Habit Raises Your Risk of Early Death by 50%, study says. Can you guess what the habit is?
Takeout and eating at restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a gimme. However, this is the first study that has sort of quantified it in terms of mortality. And to get into the nitty-gritty, what we're talking about is two or more restaurant or takeout meals a week, and the deaths were associated with heart disease and cancer. Kind of a good reminder, though, at this moment for me, as we're hopefully turning the corner on getting back to something a little more normal. Before the pandemic, I absolutely ate at restaurants two or more times per week in terms of either I'd go out to dinner with Dan, I'd meet a friend for lunch, maybe we'd get takeout or something. How about yourself?
Well, I mean, I think I'm probably just at two takeout meals per week. I mean, you know, we sometimes, like, we probably do takeout dinner once a week. But before the pandemic, it was certainly more than that. But it makes me rethink even my, although I feel like perhaps there's a difference between restaurants. I don't know.
I was thinking that my takeout meals or restaurant meals might be a bit healthier than, you know, it's always easy to like categorize other people as making worse choices than you. But of course, I probably eat more vegetables at restaurants than your average person does.
Yeah. I'm not getting hamburgers all the time. I mean,
right.
I haven't had a hamburger in 6 months.
As we discussed, though, I do eat fried food at restaurants, specifically French fries and other fried potatoes. But also I'm thinking of things like Bing Bing Dim Sum has this incredible Brussels sprout dish that I love. And the Brussels sprouts are definitely deep fried. They deep fry stuff in restaurants that you wouldn't necessarily know it, you know? But another reason I was thinking about this, and if you follow me on Instagram and have seen my stories lately, you know that I had my biannual blood lipids panel done, and my numbers are even better than they were last time. My LDL has dropped 13 points.
Wow.
And I have to attribute that to this lack of restaurants thing.
Yeah.
That's the only thing, because I went from eating out at restaurants two or more times per week to almost never eating restaurant or takeout. Like, maybe we get takeout one time a month now. Probably even less than that, though. So I can definitely see it. There's nothing else that could possibly explain that drop.
Well, I mean, there's also consistency, you know, just like over time, the cumulative effect of your healthy choices and dietary changes do add up too. I think that, I mean, I'm not discounting the lack of
you think it might have dropped anyway.
I think that because, you know, like, I would say 95% of your diet is so aggressively low in cholesterol, fiber rich, and full of vegetables that's probably a part of it too. I'm not discounting the restaurant meals, but I think that there are probably multiple factors at work.
Between this study and that, though, I'm really setting it as a goal for myself to not go back to the same frequency of meals away from home that I had before the pandemic.
I think that's fair.
That's a goal for me, for sure.
I mean, me personally, I'm almost always disappointed by restaurant experiences. Like, I always feel like I could have made something just as good or better for less money.
I sometimes feel that way, but often that is accompanied by the feeling of like, I didn't have to make it. Yes, but I could have made this, but I didn't. Someone else made it while I was working or, you know,
true,
whatever.
True. Anyway, it's interesting. I'd love to hear what our listeners think about the study.
Yeah, maybe we'll bring it up in tomorrow's once a month Patreon coffee hang.
Yeah.
And again, if this will be posted next week, so it's not tomorrow if you're listening live, but for me and Marisa here in this moment, it's tomorrow.
Exactly.
Anyway, so I'll tell you about a little fun recipe adventure I had.
Tell me.
I made Swedish tofu balls with a gravy and lingonberry jam.
That's fun. It's like very IKEA.
Do you have a feeling one way or the other about Swedish meatballs?
My feelings on Swedish meatballs are, you know, favorable. They're not something I ever really seek out or have made. But, you know, when the opportunity arises to eat them, I always have.
I don't think I've ever had them before my tofu balls. Like when
Oh, really?
I was eating them, I thought, I don't know what I'm comparing this to. I have no point of reference for them. And so, you know, it's not like I was craving Swedish meatballs, but I was paging through the cookbook, I Can Cook Vegan, which is one of Isa Chandra Moskowitz's books, of which I now am like almost a completist and have almost her whole collection. So I was flipping through it and I saw a very appealing picture of them. And especially was appealing was the lingonberry jam, which is not what I would call a typical pantry item, but on one of Dan's many internet shopping sprees, he purchased them.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like, we have this. This looks kind of yummy. Like, I'm just going to go for it. And it was pretty yummy. I really enjoyed it. Like I said, I don't know if it really tastes like Swedish meatballs. The balls were just basically tofu balls, and they have two ingredients in them that you would never guess tasting them, which is a little soy sauce and a little tahini.
Mm.
You fry them just like meatballs in a skillet with some oil. They're very delicate. They would never hold up. Like if you put them in a sauce and like tried to mix them around, it's really more of a place and then put the sauce on top. And the sauce is basically like broth, cashews, and dried mushrooms, which it was very much more delicious than I thought it was going to be. And of course the jam was delightful. I'm not sure I ever had lingonberry jam either before. It tastes kind of like cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
But it was the perfect, it was almost like a gravy and cranberry sauce sensation. It
sounds
had the
good.
Richness. It was, yeah, it was kind of a, I can't say it's going to become like a staple of my life, but it was fun. And I definitely recommend it.
What kind of tofu was it? Was it like a firm tofu?
It was the fresh tofu ink tofu, which
okay.
I don't believe is labeled. Is it? It's not.
No, it's just.
I would describe
it
though as firm, but not extra firm.
Yeah.
Speaking of the tofu, can I tell you something crazy to me?
Yeah.
This is probably should be a segment for another day, but I ended up buying this out of print vintage cookbook on from a used bookseller. It's the Angelica Kitchen cookbook, or I'm sorry, it's called the Angelica Home Kitchen. It's a restaurant cookbook from a vegan restaurant I used to love when I was in college, and a big chunk of the book is dedicated to the farm purveyors and the artisan purveyors for the restaurant. And one of them is fresh tofu ink.
Oh, funny.
So I've been eating this tofu since I was about 20 and I didn't really even know it. Anyway.
That's fun.
I just thought I would shout that out. I may well talk about that cookbook on another day, but that's the tofu I used.
You know, what's funny is I think I used to have a copy. I got one of their cookbooks, as part of like a review copy a million years ago, and I made something, and then it drifted out of my life, and now I kind of wish I had it again.
It's really an interesting stroll down memory lane for me. Like I said, we might talk about it on another occasion. I haven't really cooked from it yet, but I will.
I'm excited.
I did read it though. I did spend a lot of time reading all these farmer and purveyor profiles. So anyway, that's what's for dinner in my house lately. Do you want to tell us how you made something?
Sure. So to give a little context for this, I recently agreed to do a sponsored post on Instagram for this company called Blue House Salmon, which it's sort of like, I'm not entirely sure how they raise it, but it's on land so that it's out of the sea. So I guess it's farmed. And so on Wednesday, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do this. Not a big deal. That's all. It's always kind of a fun challenge. And so they said, oh, we'll send you some salmon. And they sent me like 6 pounds of salmon. I was expecting like, you know, 2 or 3 little pound frozen portions or something. And I got like two giant like whole side fillets. So I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do with all this salmon? And, you know, went digging around. I was like, okay, miso and honey glaze. That's what I'm going to do. And it was one of those things that I've, you know, heard about a million times, but have never done before. So I went to the internet. I, you know, did a bunch of searching. I looked at what I had and I put together this little glaze. It was soy sauce. And so a tablespoon of miso, a tablespoon of soy sauce, a tablespoon of honey, a little bit of water just to thin it out, and a grated clove of garlic. And I just sort of painted it onto this slab of salmon and baked it at 400 degrees until it was finished, which I think took about like 18 to 20 minutes. And oh my God, was it good.
Miso is magic.
It is just magical. Like, I mean, it was good to, I'm fairly certain it was good tasting salmon before I slathered it in this sauce, but the sauce really just, it made it feel like, speaking of restaurant meals, it made it feel like a restaurant meal.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think the miso glazed cod is like one of the iconic dishes from maybe Nobu.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But it was one of those things where I never realized how easy it was. And now I feel like I'm going to spoon miso sauce over anything that needs to go in the oven. I feel like, you know, miso chicken thighs, miso glazed tofu, like everything is going to get this treatment because it's so delicious. And it was great too, because I'm finally getting to the point with the babies who are, you know, toddlers, where I don't have to cook separate things for them. Like, we're finally getting to that point where it's like they have enough teeth and enough interest in food where I can just give them some of what I've cooked us for dinner.
Did they eat the salmon?
They ate a ton of the salmon.
High five.
It was so satisfying. So they had some salmon and just steamed rice and some broccoli that I chopped up real fine. And they went to town. They were so into it.
That's awesome.
It was very satisfying and felt like, because, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, you don't cook two meals for your, you know, one for yourself, one for your kids. You cook the same thing. But that hasn't really worked a lot yet. Like, occasionally if I make a soup, they'll eat that. But like if I make a big, you know, big salad for dinner, they're not interested in that. But this was something they were really interested in. Oh, I also, alongside, made some quick pickled Persian cucumbers. And so it was just some rice wine vinegar, water, honey, salt, and freshly ground pepper, and just let that sit. And they were very into the pickles too. So I feel like,
oh, that's fun.
I'm moving in the right direction when it comes to toddler food here.
Yeah, I think, I don't know how parents do it. I mentioned on the last episode, I was going to cook for my family last weekend.
Yeah.
And, I have not exactly had the best luck with cooking for my niece, who is now 7, but rice, you know, I know she loves rice. So like, that's what I did, a whole, like a rice bowl type meal, although I made quinoa for the adults. And I just basically was like trying to focus on kid friendliness. It's definitely like a different lens. One that's hard for me to put on, but I don't have your everyday practice.
Well, you know, I'm trying to simply make things that taste good, but are also accessible. So mm-hmm. like the salmon is a really good example of that. It tastes good at its core. It tastes good. It's not too hard to eat.
I wouldn't have thought of the salmon as being particularly kid friendly, but.
Well, I mean, it's a relatively mild fish. They like, you know, and their little bodies and brains are geared to like protein.
Right.
You know, they like chicken. They like eggs. I haven't done a whole lot of beef or pork with them because we don't eat that much of that. But, you know, they like turkey. So they like cheese. So I figured that salmon wouldn't be a big push because they already are predisposed to really enjoy these proteins.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, like I said, what do I know about kids? But I know a lot of adults that won't eat fish because of their finicky palates, or, you know, so high five. I mean, yeah. I think if you can get your 2-year-olds eating salmon, that seems like a good bodes well. I know so. They're not really two.
We are heading down the runway to two, though. I mean, there'll be two in July, which seems crazy. The other one that's coming is May with our birthdays. I can't believe it's already birthday time again.
I feel so robbed. You and I talked about this. I don't think on the podcast. I think off the podcast.
Yeah.
But like before this pandemic started, I was young and 42. Now I'm going to be 44. I feel robbed of my late, early 40s.
I know. I can't believe I'm about to be 42. It's crazy.
Enjoy it.
I will. I'm going to hold on to 42. The funny thing for me is I remember I was like, I didn't have a party for my 40th because that's when I was pregnant and promoting my kitchen book. And so I was just, it was too much. And I thought, okay, I'll do something for 41. And then 41 was smack dab in the worst of the pandemic. And so now it's 42. And I'm like, maybe I can celebrate in some way. But I think.
I mean, at perhaps, the very least, maybe we can get together for lunch or something.
That would be good.
I don't know.
I hope so.
I wish that I had some like better plans, but I don't. It is less than a month away now.
I know.
Two anyway. Pandemic birthdays. Unfair.
Oh, God, I know. So anyway. Should we shift to our wild card here?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. So I was thinking a lot about how we often talk about being in food ruts, and we think about the ruts as being these negative things and, oh, I need to freshen up my rut. And I wanted to turn it around and think about all of the sort of food habits and routines that aren't ruts, that instead bring us joy, that there's a lot of freedom and appreciation and pleasure in returning to the same things, having, like habits and food routines that really become sort of touchstones and are grounding and just full of pleasure. And I started thinking about this because Scott eats the same thing for breakfast every day.
I don't think there is one thing wrong with that.
He has toast and scrambled eggs. He puts the eggs on top of the toast. These days he shares little bites of his eggs with the boys, but it's like every morning that's what he has for breakfast. And he loves it. He doesn't want to shift it. He doesn't want to shake it up. He likes knowing what he's going to have. He likes not having to think about it. And it just brings him a lot of pleasure. And it made me think, I have either peanut butter toast or oatmeal for breakfast every day. And it's not, again, I find both of those things very pleasurable. I enjoy them. And then it got me thinking kind of more broadly or expansively, like, vacation food and how it's like there's certain things where you have a routine when you go on vacation where you want to have this or that. So it just made me think we often talk about how negative it is to have these, to do the same thing or eat the same thing. But really, so often it is comforting and soul soothing and pleasurable.
Agree.
So I want to hear some of yours. What sprung to mind when you saw this topic?
Well, also for me, breakfast is kind of a big deal. Just so you all know out there, Maurice and I are now recording this podcast at 9:15 on Friday morning, which is like not what you would say is early, but like I have a specific thing that I do every day in the morning, which is Dan and I get up and we make coffee and breakfast. We have our same French press coffee. And we have like a rotation of weekday things. Like we have either oats or muesli or, you know, peanut butter toast. I think those are our weekday things. And then we eat and watch The Late Show from the night before with Stephen Colbert. This goes back to when he had the Colbert Report, and we watched the Colbert Report in the morning over breakfast. And we do it kind of every day. And it's very grounding for me. It's like very, I don't know. It's just the thing that we do. And on the weekend, there's the variation in that we sometimes make something special on the weekend for breakfast. Sometimes we eat our regular breakfast, but sometimes we'll do like waffles or French toast or something, or like a tofu scramble. And then we watch like some kind of food TV, which has been in the earliest days of us being together. It was Alton Brown's Good Eats.
Oh, yeah.
And then today we like to watch America's Test Kitchen or Cook's Country or before the Bon Appetit Test Kitchen explosion, we watched that. And now we do watch some of their Claire has a video channel on YouTube where she does some of the desserts, which we watch. Anyway, so that's like one thing, a breakfast thing that's very grounding for me.
Yeah.
What else came to mind for you?
For me, so another one that is initiated by Scott, he really is a creature of habit, is that we have pizza for lunch almost every Saturday. Although I've started.
That's fun.
Yeah, I've kind of opted out. But he and the boys now have pizza for lunch every Saturday. I just got tired of pizza.
What is Scott's sun sign? I'm in an astrology class right now, and I'm just wondering.
He's an Aquarius.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Go on.
He and my sister are the same, and I've often said that I feel like growing up with my sister made it possible for me to be married to him.
Huh.
Like they have some very similar characteristics. But anyway.
That kind of habit stuff is Taurus stuff, like you and me stuff.
Yeah.
Not so much Aquarius stuff. But anyway, I'm a beginner.
No, that's okay. Yeah. And I also, for me, you know, so Scott and the boys now have pizza every Saturday. And that has been going on now. I mean, since before the boys were born, Scott would have pizza every Saturday for lunch.
Takeout pizza or homemade pizza?
Takeout pizza. But there's a certain pleasure in that too, because, and not only is pizza delicious, but we have such a tight relationship with the pizza shop down the street. Literally the place where we get pizza is like four doors down from our apartment building. And the guy who serves us the pizza has worked there. I mean, he's been working in the neighborhood the whole time I've lived here. So I've known the man who sells me pizza for almost 20 years.
Wow.
He started working at the produce shop and then he went to the pizza shop. But like, I remember when he got married and he has twins. And so we talk about our twins. And so like, there's this kind of community aspect to that particular food routine that is really sweet and grounding. Like it feels like, you know, I live in a small town when I go get pizza.
That's nice. We used to, yeah. When we lived on Clarion Street, there was a little bodega that has since closed. It was called La Fortuna. And we used to go there all the time. They always had ripe avocados. We would go there and get ripe avocados to make guacamole on the fly. And when we first moved in, there was a little boy, the son of the owners, who was there all the time. And we really watched him grow up. And Dan and I started referring to him as our son. You know, we don't have kids. And now, you know, in South Philly, the neighborhoods are really micro. So that store closed. We live a few blocks away now. And sometimes we see him around the neighborhood and he's so grown up.
How funny.
So I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Another thing for me that has become sort of like a little ritual during the pandemic is coffee and pastries from Rival Brothers, which is the coffee shop at the end of my block. We do that usually once a week and no particular schedule, but it's like really it has become a very treasured treat during these months of quarantine. I used to feel like I knew the bodegas there, or not the bodegas, the baristas. But it's harder to feel connected to people in masks, I have to say.
That is true. I have another kind of funny one from my childhood that I haven't done as much since growing up, but I think I'm going to implement for my guys as they get older, which is the tradition of the birthday cereal. Have we ever talked about this before?
I don't think so.
So growing up, my sister and I were not allowed to have sugar cereal. My mom didn't buy it. The closest to sugar cereal that she would buy was Kix, which does not, it's lightly sweet, but we were mostly a Cheerios or oatmeal household. That was cereal breakfast. But every year for our birthday, we were allowed to pick out one box of sugar cereal, preferably one my mom had a coupon for. But you know, if she didn't have a coupon for your preferred box, that was okay too. But she would like, you know, in the anticipation of birthdays, she would keep her eye out on the good cereal coupons, which is a funny thing. But anyway, and we loved it. And so part of the deal was my sister's birthday is in February, mine's in May. You had to give your sibling one bowl of cereal per box, but the rest of the box was yours. You got to eat the whole box as fast or as slow as you wanted to. I always went for Corn Pops. Those were my favorite. Raina always went for like something chocolatey, you know, Count Chocula or the Cookie Crisp or something like that. But it was so much fun and it was such a great thing to look forward to that you were going to get your one box of sugar cereal per year. And, you know, I'm definitely not going to be a parent who buys sugar cereal on the regular for my guys. But I think that, you know, when it's their birthday in July, as they get older, maybe as we approach like 4 or 5 is probably a good age to implement this, that they'll each get to pick a box of sugar cereal, and that'll be their sugar cereal for the year.
I obviously ate as much sugar cereal as I wanted at any time I want it. That was like I ate a fair amount of that stuff. I didn't always eat it for breakfast, but we Captain Crunch. I loved Captain Crunch.
Yeah,
Frosted
we had none
Flakes,
of it.
obviously. Yeah. It didn't seem special to me. What if your kids show no interest?
We won't do it. But I have a funny feeling that they'll be excited about it because it won't be something that they get on the regular basis, and so it'll be a novelty.
Yeah, I don't. Do they do all the same brands today? Do you even know?
Yeah, I mean, I've been down the cereal aisle recently. It is just as bursting with sugar cereal as it ever was. I think the only
Huh.
difference is now they try to cram some fiber into those sugar cereals.
Anything else we want to mention here with our food habits that bring us joy?
No, I mean, I feel like we've covered a good swath.
Yeah, maybe you all will share your own habits with us in the comments for today's show notes.
Yeah, I would love that.
It's your turn for what we're loving.
Yeah, so this is going to sound silly, but this is definitely a hey, I'm a mom of toddlers right now. I am loving Goldfish crackers for all that they do in my life. They kind of ease the transition from like playing to lunchtime. You know, sometimes everyone's breaking down, but lunch isn't quite ready. So I can put them in their high chairs and give them each like 3 or 4 Goldfish crackers, and it's just enough to kind of bridge the gap. I sometimes munch on them when I'm really hungry and, you know, don't have time to make some food. I can grab a small handful, and they're so salty and crunchy and pleasurable. I
Yeah.
remember reading that Julia Child was a fan of the Goldfish cracker.
How could you not like a goldfish cracker? It's so tasty.
They're so good. And I mean, I just buy the classic ones, but the boys always love them. I keep like a pint deli container of them in our stroller, so that if we're out and about and like somebody falls, or we just need a little, you know, a little snack to get us home from the playground, like they serve, they keep well, they're easy for toddlers to pick up. They, you know, as if they suck on them for a minute, they start to break down, so there's no choking risk. Like they hit all the points for me right now. And so I just wanted to send up a little appreciation to the Goldfish cracker gods over at Pepperidge Farms that I am grateful for those crackers. I am loving them. They are helping my life in so many ways right now.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Would you rather, kids notwithstanding, Goldfish crackers or Cheez-Its?
If I was choosing just for myself, the extra toasted Cheez-It to me is a superior cracker to a Goldfish. But
That's just what I was
the,
thinking of when I was
yeah,
thinking they taste like Cheez-Its a little bit.
they do. But the Goldfish, it's the form factor, the fact that they sell them in large containers, so I can buy a bunch and know that I'm not going to run out for a while. You know, I have ground Goldfish into my carpets at this point, and I don't even care. Like they just are, you know, are the thing I turn to when we need them, and they always do their job.
Goldfish forever. I wonder if they
That's
make a
right.
vegan goldfish, probably.
I'm sure someone does. It'd be
Just
crazy not
I feel snacky for them now.
to.
Well, I think
Yep.
that's a bit about it for today's episode of Local Mouthful.
Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.